This episode is dedicated to Pier Mario Morosini, who recently died whilst playing in Serie A for Livorno. Riposa in pace, signore.
There goes my bird.
Hello, welcome to the fifth proper installment, of the Seats podcast. We are your jovial hosts, Geordies, gardening enthusiasts, enjoyers of the very finest wines, troubadours and members of the Dunstan Amateur Dramatic Society. We are the male model, Robbo, brackets of spark plugs, Dad Dancing Gaza, and the Maggie Thatcher for president, fan club chairman, Matty.
President.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno.
Harried.
Right, well, since we did the last one, if you believe it, it was actually before the Sunderland match. That's how long ago it was.
It was.
And right. How long ago does that seem now?
Donkeys.
It does, doesn't it? So, anyway, from then we talked about, if you remember, we talked about the next six games being on the telly. Well, they've all gone now, and a seventh, including the Bolton match, which was indifferent. But so from there, we really should have been unbeaten if it wasn't for that last minute squeak at the Emirates, where we were robbed in typical fashion, as we generally are down there, barring the Carroll win at that time. But we've on the back of five wins. So we talked about European aspirations the last podcast, and we're up there and we've got a fighting chance now. So what's your feelings from the last seven games?
Brilliant.
Absolutely great.
Can't complain. I mean, there was times when I haven't played particularly well, but to win five games in a row, I haven't done that since, well, the last time we had a surge up the table and got into Europe under Rota, I think.
Aye. In the Premier League, definitely. I mean, the last time I had five was obviously in the Championship, but we're not talking beating Liverpool, Swansea away, West Brom away, obviously, and Norwich at home, which was a difficult, I think, in my opinion, was probably one of the most difficult games we had.
Mickey Mouse's and all, don't forget them.
Well, they were easy, though. A difficult game. So obviously, let's go through the games. Sunderland game, obviously, we weren't really on the ropes. We absolutely battered them for, well, the whole match practically. I mean, they had a good spell, if you recall, and then obviously we nicked a.
Well,
some say we nicked a point. We did nick a point because we got it with practically the last kick of the game, but we did rule that game. What was your thoughts on the Sunderland game, Shola? Popping up again at the end. Well,
they had about 20 minutes, like you say, probably the whole game. I mean, probably first half was a bit more even. Second half, we absolutely pummeled them, in my opinion. And what they were lucky to get away with a point in the end.
We did, and Ben Off, had them petrified when he's. And I think that was, for me, that was the start of Ben Off really coming into his own as well. I thought that was the game where he started to turn it around. So I think before that, he's not really worked out what to do with himself, and Podger didn't know what to do with him, but it all seemed to click into place and that second off. And since then, I think him and the rest of the team have been tremendous for the most part.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think you're right about Ben Offer. Obviously, we one of the things that we did mention after that game was your favourite Macam snack. And I think it was you, Matty, who came up with cheesy beanie panini, which was popular, and actually heard it at the match as well, which was great. Obviously, the running, we kind of thought, I kind of thought it would be lovely to get into a European spot. Obviously, I wrote that article on the Seat saying what would be the positives and what would be the kind of negatives from that. It was written from a very, I suppose, objective point of view, saying, you know, it would be great, but, you know, we have issues. But now, I mean, we're sitting in fifth. Equal points, obviously. Well, joint fourth.
It's all but confirmed now, Europe, isn't it? I mean, we need 4 points to officially do it at this stage. That's if Everton win every single game they've got left. And I think
and
I read
we the, lose every
they haven't
game.
Won five games in a row for 10 years, something like that.
And on top of that, you're right, guys. And on top of that, what we've got is we've got Stoke at home on Saturday. And in the early kick-off, they've got Everton or at Man United.
Yeah. So I mean, the only other game that's going to have any impact on this is the one that's sitting on in front of us at the minute, is Chelsea-Barcelona. Because if Chelsea go on and win the Champions League, then we would have to finish fifth.
However, Chelsea have to win the Champions League and finish outside the top six for that to apply.
Outside the top four.
No, I'm sure. Well, outside the top four.
Outside the top four. Outside the automatic Champions League places.
They would take that last Champions League place, wouldn't they? So the fourth place would then get the UEFA Cup place. Or Europa League or whatever that
is. I mean, before the obviously the Liverpool match, Liverpool-Everton FA Cup semi-final, which we'll come on to later, it was the European piece was like an enigma wrapped in a crossword, wrapped in another enigma in the back of Matty's car, drove 400 miles away, buried deep in some forest, because everyone kind of had the thoughts on how we would, you know, would we get into Europe with this permutation. You know, there was loads of ridiculous statements saying, well, we can't do it. If this happens, that happens. And it's a lot clearer now, I think. And I think it'll be a lot clearer, in my opinion, it'll be a lot clearer after this weekend.
And it's pretty much in our hands now. Well, it is in our hands, apart from the Chelsea game with Barcelona, obviously. But we can guarantee that top six place ourselves. We're not relying on anybody else. So that's the best bit about it, really.
So obviously that was a Sunderland game. Arsenal game we'll not go too deep into, but you're right, guys. What you mentioned about the Sunderland game was obviously Ben Arfa coming onto his own. We did exactly what we didn't do against Spurs. I know we're a different side down at the Emirates, but we actually went for them, and we did get something out of within, I suppose, what was it, first 20 minutes. We did actually get something, and it was Ben Arfa who did that. The game, I thought we held ourselves well. But you know, if you go behind just like Villa did in the cup at the Emirates, you know you're going to get, a grilling, and we did. And then unfortunately we didn't hang on. But I thought the lads played very well.
And that game was a complete blur to me because I spent all that time in the hospital, didn't I? waiting for the little one to arrive. And from that moment on, we've won 5 games in a row, so 100% record. Marvelous.
Hopefully, but yeah,
that Arsenal game, from what I heard, it sounded like we played pretty well, but. I mean, you tell me. Did we deserve a point? Did we not?
On the scale of things, probably not. But
I would agree with Matty. Yeah.
It sounded like we played some decent football, though. The front three, they played the three, didn't they?
Initially.
They played over.
Actually,
time.
No, Cissé didn't start, did he? Was Cissé on the bench?
Was he on the bench?
Did he not play Bar?
Bar, Obertan and Ben Arfa.
Bar and Ben Arfa are up front and Obertan on the way. Yeah. But still, I think, again, we mentioned Ben Arfa starting to come into his own in that Sunderland game, and from what I've heard about the Arsenal game, he was another bright spot in that game as well, and he got the goal, didn't he?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, did. I mean, that Arsenal game, I mean, we'll skirt over it, I think, because it kind of seems irrelevant now during the running of the run of games which we had following that. But yeah, I think that was real team spirit, I think, and it's, I think it's games like that where, if you do take a defeat like that, teams can either take it one way or take it the other. I think the team responded really well to it. We went, and then the following Sunday, which was the 18th of March, we had tea time kickoff against Norwich. I thought that was, although we did have a lot of possession, I did think that Norwich played really well. I thought that was the toughest game that we've had at home, I suppose, over 90 minutes for a while. Although the Sunday game, we did batter them. Norwich, we didn't really batter them. They tried to come, they tried to play. Lambert had his team sorted, but obviously Cissé, you know, he's given half a chance and he's going to put it away. And then obviously that was a run of seven goals in 4 games.
And I get the impression that they used that Arsenal game as a bit, actually as a springboard more than anything, because they realised that, all right, we're not that far behind the likes of these teams. We thought we were beforehand. But it just went to show that, you know, there's not a massive gap between them, so let's push on.
I think they went there with a purpose, really, to sort of find out what they were about and, you know, nothing to lose kind of thing. And, you know, we did sit back quite a bit, but I think Pardew got the tactics pretty much spot on as well to try and nick something.
And then we'd seem to take that into the Norwich game. We didn't play particularly brilliantly, but like a good team should, we found a way to win the game.
And you've just hit on a good point there. There was a few people that I don't think seriously questioned, but had thoughts on Pardew's tactics. Now, if you take the games, what you've got is you've got the Arsenal game where we could have sat back and tried to, I suppose, settle the game like you should really do when you're playing a top four side, which didn't work for us at Spurs because I think we basically didn't have our strongest side up and we suffered. But what you've got is you've got Norwich, then you've got the West Brom game away, which was like a whirlwind. Absolutely blazed that game. The Liverpool match and the Swansea match away, where Swansea, the tactics at Swansea were the complete, I wouldn't say opposite, but tactically and the strategy behind the game at Swansea and West Brom were, in my opinion, completely different. Were kind of, they played a kind of, I suppose, a harsher game, trying to get in with face. West Brom didn't really do that. They tried to play. So I've got to say that over those four games, Norwich through Swansea, including the West Brom and Liverpool match, I thought Pardew's tactics have been spot on. I don't think he's dropped a bollock at all.
I'll be honest, Robbo, I was quite critical of Pardew in that Norwich game because I thought we sat back far too much. We seemed to invite pressure. And I did say, and I think I said at half time on Twitter, if we win this, it'll be despite Pardew and not because of him. And I was wrong, I think. When I look back at it now, I think in the heat of the moment I was getting frustrated at what I thought was a game that where we should have been taking it to them, but I think we just didn't play very well. I don't think it was down to tactics. When I look back at it now, I think it was probably we just didn't play very well.
And I think that you're right, and I think the way we played at Norwich was the way we played against Bolton in the first half. Again, another team that I suppose came out trying to play, but I mean,
we looked fatigued. I thought
we did look tired. We looked tired.
But I still think Pardew got tactics right in where he made a change at half time for that and brought Shane Ferguson on for Page.
If you're winning games, do you really want to be questioning the tactics? Well, yeah, probably, because I suppose you pay your money. You've got your right to speak.
You can recognise when there's potential cracks there, can't you? So even though you've won the game, that doesn't mean you've won it because of great tactics. It might have been a moment of genius, like the Ben Arfa moment, you know, against Bolton. The point is, there's nothing wrong with criticising the way the team's set out. And then what you've got to do is, once the heat of the moment's over and you look back at the way we played, do you still feel the same? And if you do, then you were probably right. And if you don't, you were probably just taken away by the moment.
I think there's a lot of people with a lot of different opinions. I mean, of those games, so let's take them through. So Sunderland through, so 4th of March we played Sunderland, 9th of April, so just over a month we played 7 games. Obviously came out there with 5 wins and a draw, which is, I suppose, is one of the, I think if not after that game, if we took those 7 games, we would have been either 1st or 2nd in the league. We were flying, really. What was your favourite moment, I think, so the Sunderland through to the Bolton game? What was your favourite moment, Matty, those 7 games?
I really enjoyed Liverpool at home because it was just comical from start to finish, really.
There was a lot of people laughing at the end at full time. It was kind of that game was a lot different from the kind of, I suppose, the outpouring after the Man United game. Did you not find it was more of a Man United game? Was I think we thought we weren't going to get anything from that game, so it was kind of more of a shock but fabulous result. Whereas the Liverpool game, there was a kind of lot of, I suppose, nastiness and bickering and laughing and things like that. It was a lot different atmosphere, wasn't
obviously
it?
Obviously, it was down to the Carroll and Jose factor and the Dalglish factor and the fact that Liverpool have conducted themselves like complete bellends this season in almost every aspect of the club. And I don't think, I almost guarantee that win for us and the way it happened will have went down very well with probably every other team, fans of every other team in the country. There's very few fans who would have been on Liverpool's side
The moment Andy Carroll dived. I think it was written, wasn't it?
It brought it to the boil really early on.
Aye.
If he hadn't done that, I don't know how wild the atmosphere would have been. But the fact he did that just meant, yeah, you know what, fucking.
We're gonna
go mental, yeah.
Good point, right? And there was, if you remember, on the social networks, as ever, there was a lot of discussion about, did he not want to score against United? Did he lose his footing? Did he dive?
Did he do a chopper?
Well, I mean,
as far as I'm concerned, he saw an opportunity to get a penalty and get the goalkeeper sent off and get his team 1-0 up and playing 10 men.
Everyone, that's what I'm saying. Everyone has their theory on it. There was some I actually never even thought of until they were posted, and I thought, did he? And then when I seen it again, I just thought, no, that's...
Be honest with yourself. Is he clever enough to come up
no,
with
No, fair enough. I mean, yeah, I mean, fair enough.
In the heat of the moment on a football pitch.
I mean, fair
I
enough.
I don't think so.
I mean, I can't imagine him sitting there with a cup of Earl Grey the night before and he's pipe and slipper saying, well, tell you what, if I'm in this scenario, I'm going to do this. And if I'm So, yeah, fair enough.
I think a few people have been reading too many of David Icke stories, haven't they?
Yeah, I think
Andy
so.
Andy Carroll's a shape-shifting lizard who dives over goalkeepers and all of that
I
stuff.
I mean, to be
he
fair.
Looks like
he looks like one. He looks like one. So, I mean, what about you, guys? What was your favourite moment of those seven matches?
Yeah, well, I guess if you write off the whole Liverpool game as one massive hilarious moment that he's already covered, probably for me, Cisse's second goal against West Brom, the chip over the keeper.
Swansea.
The chip was just... I think it was at that precise moment where you thought, hang on, this kid is genuinely talented, isn't he? He's not just a poacher, he can score every type of goal.
Didn't your mate Danny Graham, the one Soccer AM, the next day say, the keeper says he didn't mean it, he was bending it in the bottom corner.
He did, and then he had to clarify his comments on Twitter later on saying that, I'm only going off what the goalkeeper told me. I was at the other end of the pitch, etc., etc.
I mean, that goal was outstanding. I mean, everybody who was anybody, even the Macams were saying, "Whoa, hang on a sec, this lad's a bit special." I mean, he's a finisher, pure and simple. So, I mean, for me, I think other than I suppose those two moments, I think. You're probably looking at, for me, the Shola equaliser against Sunderland.
I forgot about that one. It seemed so long ago.
I know you didn't mention it, and I know the other two things. I mean, there's so much to choose from. I mean, Ben Offa's performances are another one. The fact that
Ben Offa's goal against Bolton.
I mean, the thing
with the Shola moment, though, it was hilarious. It was equally hilarious and brilliant, in my opinion.
I still don't know why he didn't take the penalty, though. I know Demba's been taken all season, but, you know...
I've wiped that moment out of my mind, I think.
Shola against Markham's equals goal, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it was... I was going to say probably the run that Ball was having. He might have thought, well, let's get him a goal, but, yeah, Shola should have had that. So, I mean, great run of games, as I say. Back to five wins. Could make it six on Saturday, hopefully against Stoke. But, obviously, we're sitting in the table, 59 points. We're 11 goals behind Spurs, but that's not to say... I think Spurs are... Everton are playing before us on Saturday in the early kickoff at Old Trafford, and then I think Spurs are playing at Loftus Road.
And isn't it Chelsea Arsenal?
In the tea time, and then Chelsea Arsenal on the Sunday. Because they're both Chelsea are in Europe. So
nice
we've got a really good opportunity to, I suppose, put the willies up Spurs, if you will, if you forgive the statement. But we've got a good opportunity to, if we get a few goals. Get the goal difference up to 10-11, you know, and see what happens. But you're right, it's in our hands. Let's take it from there.
Did everybody enjoy the derby day, by the way?
Nah.
I enjoyed afterwards.
I don't think you enjoy any.
I don't like the derbies.
Yeah.
I don't like them because they shouldn't be, but there's always a hell of a lot riding on it. And even when you win or you don't get beat, the feeling of relief for me is stronger than the feeling of joy, apart from the 5-1, because that was a totally different ball game. But for me, that feeling of not getting beat, thank Christ for that, is actually stronger than the celebration when we do it. Which is probably
I think I
a
enjoyed
bit weird,
being out from 9:30 in the morning, having shots of Jaeger bombs and a pint for breakfast, and then an actual breakfast, and then meeting Robbo until probably about 9:00 at night. In the carriage here, hammered was absolutely great. Like so,
I mean the derbies is one of those. I suppose it only comes round once a year. The home matches.
I just get a nervous wreck when it's big games. Terrible.
Expected. I mean, if you remember the 5-1 game, we were everyone expected us to lose that game. This game, I think a lot of people expect us to win the game. Although there had been on a potato, it had the lads at Sunderland on the back of what. They won great form.
Decent,
they won a lot of games.
I think that was part of the problem for me as well, is that there was a lot of mags who were a little bit overconfident, I thought, and I had this horrible feeling it was going to come back and bite everybody on the arse. And I feel that every time we get confident about games, especially home games like the Wolves and stuff, people say, "Now we're going to hammer them, it's going to be 6-7-0 and all that," and then when it's 1-1 with 10 minutes to go, there's hell on.
I mean, that's probably the same with every team, but I know what you mean. You're kind of building yourself up for a fall, aren't you? Doing stuff like that. So, obviously, you've got European, we've got European aspirations. We've got a hell of a chance now with the Europa League. But we've also got a shot at the Champions League. The Liverpool-Everton FA Cup semi-final. Again, another kind of boiling point for people saying, I couldn't give a shiny shite if Hitler's in charge of this team. I want anything to happen to get Newcastle in Europe. That's fine, and a lot of people were... My opinion was, what will be. You know, these things have a habit of evening themselves out, I think.
Well, if we're good enough, we should have been able to qualify off one back.
Well, there is that, but the other side of the coin is, why would you hate another team so much that you would rather they lost and Newcastle suffered because of it? Do you support Newcastle, or do you dislike some other team more?
No, but regardless of what you want, it's having no effect on that match or that outcome. Do you know what
I
mean?
No, it's not. But when people are saying, I'd rather Liverpool get beaten, we do it ourselves, whatever. No. Newcastle is my priority. I don't care really what happens to Liverpool unless we're playing them, or Liverpool need to get beat for our purposes.
You know what? I could totally understand that in that situation, but the fact that people seem to forget that Liverpool have already qualified for Europe. And that's kind of where I was like, well, hang on a sec. I mean, I had a bet on that game. I had Jelovic to score first, and I had Everton to win 2-1. It's two separate bets. So I wasn't really bothered. I actually thought that Everton would win the game.
I did as well, especially when Jelovic scored.
And I just thought that would happen. I wasn't willing it to happen. I just thought it would. And I would have been happy if they had have, you know, regardless. Well, but I can understand people, but it was kind of the... I felt ferocity with some of the comments.
That would have probably cost us a place in Europe, let's be honest. But if you're honest, the chances are, regardless of what you think's going to happen, the chances are we're going to finish sixth. Yeah? Because we've got Chelsea, speaking of Chelsea, they've just gone 1-0 up against Barcelona. But, well, are we going to finish ahead of a team who've just gone 1-0 up against Barcelona?
Probably not.
We went 3-0 up against them once. Anyway... So, I mean, I know what you mean, guys, but it's all ifs and buts in how would you fall. But I know
it
what
is,
you mean.
But I'm more bothered about what happens to us, and if a team getting beat or winning or whatever is beneficial to us, that's what I want to happen.
I felt slightly wrong, though, rooting for Liverpool against Everton, because, you know, I quite like Everton, and I don't like Liverpool. But, like you say, would I care more about Newcastle getting something beneficial out of Liverpool winning? Aye, pretty much.
Of course you would, and I think... I mean, for me, it's one of those things where I don't know about you lads, but I thought Andy Carroll had a really good match. You know, he missed a couple of sitters, but he was winning everything. His distribution was good. He was the target man, and he actually came up with a winner, regardless of how many chances he missed. He still won that match for Liverpool.
I feel for Andy Carroll a bit. Me, I feel like I'm the only mag who does. But at the end of the day, he's a Geordie. He came through the ranks at Newcastle, so he's still one of us, regardless of what you think of him, and. Genuinely don't think he actually wanted to leave. I think he was forced out for the ridiculous money. I mean, if I was Ashley, and even being a mag as I am, I would have wanted him out the door for that amount of money.
His agent would have had quite a lot to do with it as well, saying, you know, this is a really, really, really amazing offer. You probably want to take it. So.
But I don't. I'm not one of these people who wishes him ills and wishes him to fail.
No, that's
I'd
that's
quite
ridiculous.
Like to see him do all right.
Yeah. I think he would.
I don't want him to be brilliant, because that means the chances are Liverpool are going to catch up.
I think he would have done a lot better at Liverpool, as he has done, if they actually decide to play to his strengths rather than, you know.
And they did. I thought they did on that semi final match. I agree with you 100%. I thought they did, and when I mean, I sat down and I actually had the house to myself for once, where I could actually sit and watch a game of football afternoon, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good cup match. You know, to and fro, and, you know, I think, I mean, the two goals were ridiculous, really. Two errors cost the goals, but Carroll's goal was excellent. Took it well when he needed to. And I'm with guys, I don't wish Carroll any ills. You know, if I was that age and I was offered a deal like that, I mean, you're not going to turn it down. I mean, regardless of how big you think Newcastle or Liverpool have won a trophy this season, I think they've got the most trophies the most trophies for the League Cup. But they've got a lot of trophies, and they are a prestige club globally. So he would have been a fool if he hadn't taken it. And regardless, people saying, well, he could have done this. Modern football is not all about that. Then people know that, and people who are bad-mouthing them and abusing them should just grow up and focus on their own team and not other people's, especially not Liverpool.
For me, there's a big difference between Carroll and Jose as well. Jose pissed about at the end of his contract, let it run down, and we got way less money for him than what we should have done because of him being an arse. So he deserves way more abuse than Andy Carroll. Andy Carroll has signed us X many players. You could sit there and count the players that we've signed for that 35 million quid. Jose went for a fee that was way below what he's worth because he deliberately let his contract run down.
I mean, we'll never know what Andy Carroll actually thought, but he probably did have a thought with him being a Toon fan at the end of the day of like.
Well, I've seen a photo of Steve Wraith's iPhone. No, he didn't want to leave, did he? Or was it? No, he wasn't coming back.
I mean, he probably thought as well, I'm going to get a good deal out of this, and Newcastle can, you know, progress on the money that's coming in.
Even think that. He probably just thought, Liverpool, some extra money. And let's be honest, the chairman probably wants us out.
I think that's naive as well. I mean, as I say,
it's just an opinion. I
don't think he's that kind of lad. I mean, I don't know the lad, but. You know,
I don't get the impression he's looking that long-term at Newcastle's future when Liverpool come along with a massive wedge of money for him.
But he might have thought, you know, if I do that, you know, all the conversations that came out when he did go, and people were saying, oh, great, 35 million in the coffers. Maybe he's naive by a lot of the fans, but, you know, the club again failed in their communications, failed to let everybody know what was happening with that. And regardless of what you think, the club has put it to good use. So... and that's obviously down to Pardew, down to Ashley, I hate to say it, down to Lambias, and down to Graham Corso
say, don't
and his
Graham
team.
Far,
so, I mean, as I say, what will be, I'm getting the feeling now that what happens at Newcastle is perhaps starting to even itself out. I hate to say it, but it seems to have turned into a kind of a normal club, which is a bit weird, after how many years of craziness and managers and
a normal club who has an owner who was detested a year ago who's tried to change the name of the ground, etc.
It's not normal, but I know what you're talking about. Well, I wouldn't say, I mean,
how many normal clubs have changed the name of their ground recently to Sports Direct?
Well, I mean, forget,
but I know exactly what you're getting at, but
forget about the cosmetics of the club.
It's still a ridiculous,
think about the football
club.
Team, yeah, and think about all of the news we'd had previously. All about players, all about contracts, all about the owner. Now everyone's talking about the team,
but you've got
performances, and I know what you're saying.
You've got a load of things put together that shouldn't work, though, haven't you? You've got an owner who nobody likes. You've got a chairman who's essentially a non-speaking tosspot. You've got a manager who's a puppet. You've sold your best players. You've released your captain. You've sold another one of your captains in Nolan to a championship club, and
your buys.
After all that, we're a far better team. That's not normal, like.
No, I mean, where we are now, though, is
great.
I think
testament to the hard work of the scouting staff, and like you say,
the manager
Ashley Decker, and on the pitch podium.
Perhaps normal was the incorrect word. Let's settle with the word stable, right? Until the next thing happens. Which it will, as you know, because Ashley is like that. He's impulsive. Opinion is he's impulsive.
We could now be described as a football club instead of a circus.
Well, it's getting that way. That's what I meant. Let's compare it to this time 2 years ago, or this time early season last year.
Well, even a year ago when Hughton went.
So
Pardew came. I mean, it was, as far as I was concerned, that was a totally ridiculous decision.
I know, but
and we've been proved wrong time and time again.
I think what they've done though, as well, quite well, since the whole stadium naming fiasco, is they've actually tried to get some good PR as well on board. You know, even something as daft this week as CC going randomly round to some lad's house who sent him a card or something.
By the way, did you see the video of CC getting his hair cut?
Aye.
On Sunderland Road. Yeah. He went to the barbers, and by the time he came out, there was 100 screaming kids in the road.
Because the kids in Gateshead are off this week, aren't they? So.
Well, they would have been there even if they weren't off, let's be honest.
That's true.
if we did this podcast a year ago, I think we would have talked 80% about the club, the infrastructure of the club, 20% about the games.
And that 20% about the games would have been talking about how we're probably going to be skirting with relegation next season.
Because we didn't have this player, we didn't have that player. Exactly. So, which we did,
we look
really.
We're looking forward for the first time in what's probably 2 years since we got promoted.
And I think there's a lot to look forward to. There was a few people commenting on how will we perform next season and what will the outlook be. I mean, fair enough, I've appreciate people are looking forward because the fans and they want to understand what's happening in the club, but you know, let's get this season out the way, see what happens in the close season, and keep the team together, perhaps build on it maybe if we need to, but I just want to let this, I don't want the season to end, if I'm honest.
The thing that concerns me is, and it's quite probably quite a negative attitude given how high we're flying, but the model that we've got of buying players on the up and selling them for a big fee, it only takes one of those players on the up to not be quite as good as their predecessor and it'll start to go tits. So there's a lot of pressure on the likes of Graham Carr this summer if we do sell the likes of Teote. And to be honest, I think he'd probably go. We've got to get somebody in of equal quality. Now, we've been brilliant at it so far. Every player we've got rid of, probably down to a man, has been replaced by a better player.
Yeah.
How long can we keep doing that? And how much difference will it make if we bring one who's slightly inferior? If we've got our tactics right and we've got our key players and key positions.
Don't know, it worked well for Arsenal, didn't it?
Well, that's the thing. It's going to be interesting to see how it turns out. Going to be good interesting. But people have to accept that we're going to sell players. Players are going to leave in the summer.
You should never get emotionally attached to players. Yeah, you should never do that.
Well, that's the key. I think that's something I said a while back as well. If you're getting too attached to players, you're going to be devastated because they will leave eventually.
It's a team game, you know. It's a team game. So there was one
apart
thing
from Schürrle. You can get as attached to Schürrle as you want
because he's not.
He's never
going to
leave, is he?
So there was, I suppose, there was one thing I wanted to mention. Two really. Don't really want to drag it out, but there's two, and that was. The transformation of James Perch, and in recent games Mike Williamson, I know people call him a stopper, post box and all of that nonsense, but you know, over the past few games Perch as well is obviously playing in his centre half role in a few games and then playing centre midfield. I think we all know now he's a utility player, but I think we all know where his strengths are. I think he's really rode that kind of bad vibes that he was getting and people abusing him. I mean, remember the Forest Cup match that we went to and he was getting abused senseless, and he was he's part of our team, and I've never understood that. The Aubameyang piece, never understood it. I really couldn't believe it, but I'm really pleased that he's kind of turned it round in his performance
as well. And for me, Williamson, since he had that monumental cut up at West Brom for their goal, I think he's been foot perfect since then.
Pretty much.
Brilliant. Yeah. And maybe it was just that he's had a couple of kick up the arses. I think he might have been to blame for one of Arsenal's goals.
It was when Van Persie turned him and he just kind of stood there. Aye. As if any one of us could have been defending and maybe done a better job. That was a speed thing. I mean, Van Persie would skin anyone.
I was just going to say that. I mean, how many centre-halves have been left on the rouse by Van Persie this season? Scorer of 34 goals or whatever it is.
But many fans don't need any excuse for these people, so...
No, they need. Some fans just need a scapegoat. It's gone from Perch, it was Schürrle, it's been
Simpson.
Aubameyang.
So,
anyway, so in the final thing...
Do you not think Mike Williamson sounds too posh to be a footballer, by the way?
I don't think
he sounds
ever
like a bit of a
speak.
Raw.
He is, yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, it does come across.
Looks like you'd be drinking Pims and wine bar or something.
Drinking
or
pish.
Pims.
All right.
He's not Big Rills.
Big Rills. Anyway, so last thing.
Isn't that
for
a
you.
Chippy on the high street?
No, that's, what's it called? Gill's Fisheries.
Ah, right.
Harry Ramsden.
last one before we break. Krull missing out on the young player of the year.
Ridiculous.
Joke.
Ridiculous.
Joke.
Not a single Newcastle player, and either the player or young player of the year is laughable.
And considering where we are on the table as well. And Scott Parker, alright, he's doing a decent job. Doing a decent job at Spurs, but how?
To be honest, I think since the turn of the year, well, Spurs have been crap, so has he. I don't think he's stood out at all since Spurs' form's dropped.
I don't think he's stood out at all for years, but it's just because everybody thinks he's great.
But the point is that because... Has Spurs form downturned because he's not been playing well? or is he just not playing well and he's part of a team that isn't playing very well?
I reckon the
pundits would argue, oh, Scott Potter's not playing well, so therefore Spurs aren't playing well.
I would say it was the latter, me.
Pass it backwards.
We've seen it ourselves to a point where he was in an argument with the fans, wasn't he, in front of the East Stand?
He kicked off. And for the East Stand to kick off at him, it takes quite a lot.
Knocked somebody's flask over or something.
Me tartan blanket.
Excuse me, you've interfered with my thermos.
The champagne must have been off, so they've had to drink beer and spirits. Anyway, so I think that's time for a break, you think?
Oh yeah.
Aye.
So moving on from the football stuff and onto some questions that we had sent us on social media, so Twitter and Facebook. And the first one was sent from at Simple Simer on Facebook, aka Stalker Supremo. And basically the question is, do you expect massive handbags for when Timmy joins the Holland team this summer with Robin van Persie, who showed again what a cunt he is?
These fellas are actors, man. They'll have been chums straight away, so I don't think so. And if they are, then obviously he's the kind of player that would say, well, you're just a third choice keeper. We may be second.
I know, but look at the players who play for England, man. And most of them probably hate each other. Gerrards and Ashley Coles and Lampards and all them clowns.
They must hate each other as much as we hate them.
Well, I bet any player who doesn't play for one of those four teams hates everybody else.
Probably,
I bet you when Andy Carroll went and played for England, he probably wanted to chin them all. Being a Gatorade lad. Although that could have been anybody, couldn't it?
Doesn't have to be an England squad, could have been a bar just anyway.
It doesn't even have to be a bloke, does it? Ooh.
Right, so I think...
Is the answer, really.
Nah, I don't think so.
I doubt Van Persie will give a toss, to be honest with you.
But if you remember, the last... Holland usually have massive brawls, don't they, before every major tournament, so let's not rule it out. You know, someone might have spilt, I don't know, a sex toy in someone's clog or something, and then there could be...
Spilt a sex toy?
Yeah, well, you know, it could be in a jelly or something. Have you heard of that? Anyway, moving on quickly.
This is my lover. Also my friend.
Is a bit sexy. So I think at V4YO, is that Wilco?
That's Wilco.
Oh, mad Wilco. So Wilco's put, we're approximately 5-1 and on the Mac and Boom bus cycle.
Still amusing that. Like,
being the author of this, and Lee Ryder, if you're listening, you thieving fucking baldy bastard. I think they're at the bit where they get the new manager, they have a little boost. I think they're kind of, if you're looking at the circle near the top, heading towards the right-hand side, the bit where they get some poor results, and then they start to turn on the manager. They're round about that stage.
Right, good answer. Straight to the point. At Ron1981RS, could you discuss players' ability to get back in favour with fans?
Hang on. Read that name out again.
Ron1981RS.
Doesn't that just show you that Twitter's starting to get too densely populated? You can't even have a username that hasn't got random strings of letters and numbers. Sorry, that username is not available.
You have to put
what
an
about
RS at
the end. 77? No, that username's taken.
So hang on.
78?
Hang on. This fella, well, I presume it's a fella, could be...
Could be meaning behind it.
Could be a woman. Yeah, there could be a meaning behind that.
Ron.
So.
Ron.
1981
RS.
He might have an RS turbo. His name might be Ron, and he might have been born in 1981. Boom.
That would be kind of good if that was his actual first name, because then he'd be able to get like a license plate without having to buy a personalised one. Maybe he's changed his name to his license plate. In the top tips. Get a cheap personalised licence plate by changing your name to ND47.
Anyway,
I digress.
Can I ask the question? I think we've already covered it, actually. Could you discuss players' ability to get back in favour with fans? Perch Williamson. I think that's very simple. Work hard, perform well, Be honest with yourself, be honest with the fans, be honest with the manager, and you'll be fine. Look at
know your limitations as well.
Look at the way Purchase held himself. I mean, he's been put in some situations where he was never, ever going to perform well because he's just not that player, but he's stood in because there's no one else to stand in there, and he's held himself
well.
I
don't even think you have to play particularly well to get back into favour either. You just have to show that bit of passion.
Aye.
And show that you give a toss.
Which he has done.
And
both
just
of
show
them have done.
A small amount of aptitude, you know. Look at Ryan Taylor. He hasn't been a world beater, but he's gone from somebody who was a bit of a joke figure, really. Nobody really didn't even look at him as a first team player to arguably one of our players of the season.
Agreed.
I think so. I think Obertan was looking like that would happen after the utility performance at Blackburn, but I think the problem with Obertan is he won't get in the side now because there's just too many players ahead of him. But, you know, a similar kind of thing. People were lambasting him, saying he was this, he was that, and then he come out and he scored that lovely goal.
He's got a role to play for me. He's an impact substitute for games away from, well, home and away.
And when teams are tiring.
Exactly, when you need to stretch the game because the opposition's tiring, you get him out there, especially with the front three that we're playing. You can go on either side of that front three and just stretch teams.
Fairy snuff. So, two questions from Adam F2384. Now, that's quite random. Unless he was born on the 2nd of March.
Never too late.
84. Let's not pick apart people's Twitter monikers.
Let's not get down in the names, yeah.
So, first question is, night in with the hairy bikers, cooking a feast, or a night out with Pardiola, lathered in Jupe? I take it Jupe must be one of these young persons... perfumes.
Jupe is older than you, mate, to be honest.
Is it?
So that's saying something.
Like, I've never heard of it.
Proper old man's...
Well, only yours, Brute.
Brute.
So...
That's along the same lines, I think. But I'd probably choose the night out with Pardiola.
Pardiola for me, like...
And
especially with...
Even though I love me bait, and the hairy bikers are kind of decent...
I didn't know the hairy bikers off, I'm honest.
Geek sheep,
sounds bad,
but his geek glasses on.
Anyway,
Pardiola, man, he'll pull all the birds.
Your currency never let us finish. It was actually, what would Shola do? I think Shola
Shola
would do both, I think, wouldn't he, at the same time?
Exactly. Whilst riding a bike and eating an apple.
And playing basketball.
And
brilliant.
Parking segway.
Playing backwards. Basketball brilliantly.
Driving a JCB.
Driving a JCB, yeah. As you do.
And playing
tennis.
Pizza.
Playing tennis, eating pizza. He's a man of a million photos, isn't he? You could have a blog just about pictures of Shola. Should we just do that? Should we just change the site to Pictures of Shola?
www.picturesofshola.co.uk.
Don't steal that, anyone, you bastards.
It's on record now.
So, and his second question also asked, how good can Cissé be once he settles into English football?
That's this unrunning joke, isn't it, about how he's supposedly didn't settle into English football and he was struggling to adapt and all that, and whilst he was struggling to adapt, he's got 10 goals in 9 games or whatever it is.
To be fair to Adam, he did send this when we initially were going to do the podcast, which was, I think, was a few weeks ago. So,
no, but it's still rumbling on, that joke, isn't it? Because they keep trying to peddle the line there now. They're just trying to unsettle players deliberately. And today has been linked with Man City, isn't it?
I was in the people at the weekend, 15 million. All
unbelievable.
Right. Okay.
Well, anyway, in these last...
So, yeah, we'll take a £5 million profit on a player. Aye. Who scored 10 goals in his first 9 games.
It's not going to happen, is it?
Why
even he's not that thick.
Why would you?
Aye. So, and he being him, being the kind of...
You thin...
Uber god body at...
thin cockney bastard.
Who takes on... No, but is he not three people? I've heard he's three different people. Like God. and the last one, in brackets, is what's the point of Wasps? Proper wankers, Wasps.
There's no point in Wasps.
No, absolutely no need for them to
you
be on
been,
this planet.
You ever been to Dublin during the summer and got a pint of Guinness?
Yes.
The
Wasps are addicted to Guinness. They sit
Guinness.
Around the rim of your glass and that. So basically what I'm trying
they
to
sit
say
around
is
the rim of your glass.
Are they not just Irish Wasps?
Well,
always after some sort of drink.
To be sure.
To be sure.
Hang on.
Are they wearing little green hats?
No, we got wrong last time for our racism.
We did against the Irish. We love the Irish, you know.
Do I?
And is it really racist?
Racist.
Can't even say the word, never mind beards.
But went back in Dutch now, racist.
It's a little bit racist.
It should be racist.
You sound like Sean Connery.
Sean Canary. Anyway, so yeah, sorry, Irish listeners, we do love you.
And the Dutch.
Yes, that's what I've said before. I hate people who are... what was it? Abusive of other people's cultures and the Dutch.
Love it.
Austin Powers, by the way.
Yes, I do.
gold member. Our good friend and Spursite, if you put an S in the middle of that.
Yeah, we offended him on the last podcast as well. Come to think
which
of
is
it.
Gareth.
Did he say anything about
Gareth
it?
John
he
O.
Did. He passed he comment about it.
We apologise, Gareth. We do like you, really. Although, we wish you wouldn't tweet about listening to Take That, because, you know, people will talk. Gareth Johnson, what impact will the pasty tax have on the average supporter attending a match? And do you attend a protest? I presume that's aimed at you two lads.
One, they'll be worse off. Two, yes.
Indeed.
Is that nice and concise there for you, Gareth?
What was the question again?
Something about pasties.
Am I Gareth? Anyway,
are you pissed off that pasties are going to cost more? Yes.
I signed the petition.
Do you think people will be bothered to match day?
Not really. They'll still buy them.
I signed the petition in Greggs. Feel a bit better.
There was a petition.
Petition.
Get rid of the pasty tax.
There was actually a petition. Really?
Huh?
Shut up, man.
There is. It's in Greggs because it's this whole thing where they don't even claim to sell hot food. They sell freshly baked food. Whether it comes hot or not.
A.K.A. Wham.
Right, so whether it comes hot or not depends on what time you go and get
say
it.
To be honest, it's never hot. Like.
No, I don't know. Like, I've been in there. Sometimes it's been like molten lava.
Hotter than the
sun. You know that horrible feeling where you think it's not that hot.
When
you bite into it, it's
when the steak bake and you've ended up with like a burnt face.
And
they
end up with a big lip. When
the pastry's not that bad, so you think, wait, I'm in here. And then you bite into it. Lava in shoes.
And you do that whole like bite and walk forward kind of thing.
It's also known as a monkey pasty?
Monkey in the bath.
Monkey bath. So Gareth, that was the answer, whatever that was. Our good pals Taylor and Bestie, second greatest podcast, Newcastle United podcast out there.
Behind another one. Definitely not ours.
NUFC fans.
How many standard tranquilizer darts would it take to bring down a charging Toyota in the wild?
Is that plural or?
No, I'm going to ask the second part.
Ah, right.
How
a lot
strong is the tranquilizer?
Oh, let's not go into it. Let's just move on.
you've got to make these things clear, lads.
Which started the So if you put like a kitten to sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not going to do anything.
You don't need to shoot like an.
So are you going to give him a dead left like?
Eyebrow
bye.
But that started the. If you remember, that started the conversation. What's the correct collective noun question for a group of Toyotas?
I think my Toyota. Suggestion was an A team of Toyotas, wasn't it?
It was. There was an anger of Toyotas.
A mohawk.
A tank of Toyotas. There was a herd of Toyotas, which I thought was quite good.
A piss off of Toyotas. I like an A team of Toyotas.
So there was plenty. There was some really shit ones as well. People just looked and went, "Oh fuck, I can't be honest." A gaggle of Toyotas.
An amount of Toyotas.
A load of Toyotas.
A large number.
Some Toyotas.
So anyway, so if you can
put some effort in,
if you can put that on Twitter, if you can come up with collective nouns, say for a group of perches.
In Obertans. That might be interesting.
A UFO of Obertans. there you go again.
Alien 3 of Obertans.
So, anyway.
Cocoon of Obertans.
Racist.
Last one, right? The last one's a bit... I'm going to go in there. The last one is from Barry Amiobi, which is Toonami MIA on Twitter. The problem is I lost the actual question, but I've got the answer. So the answer was...
Hang on, isn't this Jeopardy?
So hang on. The answer is, right, the answer is, failing that, there's always Spuggy from Biker Grove, brackets after Cheryl Curl. So I've just put, what the fuck was the question, Bazza? So what was the question? Who would you shag, I suppose, after Cheryl Curl? Would it be Spuggy? I don't know. But anyway...
Who would you rather have as your mother?
Spuggy, because I think I'd get a bit irate with all the lads like eyeing up me mother and going, "Whoa, look at that."
Spuggy's got a horrible laugh though, hasn't he? Wasn't she the one at the end of the Biker Grove theme?
Ha 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 ha. I think she was actually.
Would that be on repeat constantly?
Ha 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 ha.
Every time you crack a joke.
Ha 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 ha.
I read Spuggy. Settle doing mother.
Is your mother actually? She could be
that
old.
Ha ha.
She could be old enough to be your mother. Like she must have been would be a canny age now. Like. I think. Anyway.
She was massively ginger as well, wasn't she?
She was, she had ginger, eyebrows. That's the gingerest of gingers. No, if you've got the eyebrows, though, you know you've got the full set. Like
double gingers.
Aye. Not the old.
The double ginger.
You full on kept in the dark, Ginger, there, like some sort of cupboard,
like Willy on the Simpsons.
Christ, we're going to offend Ginger people this week, aren't we?
Well, you've got to offend somebody, man. Where's the fun in not offending people, you know?
Anyway,
that
was the questions from Twitter. Very poor effort. There was more, like, but basically we couldn't be bothered to put them in.
Well, I got to 8 o'clock yesterday and I was like, I'm not putting any more on, even though you've all tweeted, so bollocks.
So, anyway, Facebook, you kind of get normal people on Facebook by normal names.
Because I think they don't realise that we're piss-taking bastards on Facebook, do they?
No, true enough. I mean, we're
they think we're some sort of source for news.
Or something.
Speaking of source for news, news now.
Yeah.
Would you like to explain what happened there, Robbo?
If you're listening, Mr. News Now, how dare you remove
Mr.
our
Mr. Now?
Our
first name news.
Our RSS feed, only because some twat whose email we did actually give out complained because, like you've just said, a traditional blog that apparently feeds into News Now should be giving news and not feeding pictures of their people basically painted as military leaders, to which we got what the fuck's this got to do with Newcastle United? Well, I had a Newcastle United badge on.
You have contravened almost all of News Now's policies.
Until you rectify this, you will be banned.
To which I replied, go get fucked on the email. So I don't think we'll be heading for News Now soon.
To be fair, we definitely did not post the email address of the person who put the comment on and
did
tell everyone to sign them up to pornographic websites and that.
To send them definitely Bulgarian not. Fourth Division football fan sites. No, we didn't do that at all. So, I mean, if you're that small-minded that you would complain, then you're obviously an absolutely massive fuck Todd, who's got no better D. Right, should probably get out more.
Whoever
you know.
You are can piss off from reading the site again. Never fuck come back.
Correct.
Yeah.
So anyway, moving on to normal questions.
If you're on Twitter, you can piss off following on there as well.
He probably follows on there though, as well.
To be fair, that picture was
what was his
random.
Name? Tommy Tuckamota or something like that.
oh, we're under the Japanese now. Well done, everybody.
It did look a bit bizarre using it.
Moving east.
Anyway, face bonk questions. Josh Drain, do you think that there's any substance behind the claims from the press that Barr is unhappy and wants to move clubs in the summer?
Yes.
No.
I do.
I don't think
there's any substance behind it. However, I don't think he's probably, well, his agent especially is probably the one after a bit of dollar.
I think it's probably not that he's unsettled. I just think he's probably had his nose pushed out of joint a bit. And understandably, you know, when you were the main man 1 minute and the next minute you're being sacrificed.
I know, but he can't expect to carry the team the way he was.
No.
So, you know.
If he leaves, though, we'll just unleash a seat while on him like we threatened to do in the past.
Correct.
Like we did on Tommy.
The
guy who dobbed away into the news now. So unleashed a seat while on him.
I think all of the media love to just speculate and then they go, oh, we told you first, even though they've just speculated and
doesn't
if
help.
Something does come of it, they will actually say, well, we told you first here, because that's the kind of fucking...
Doesn't help
that's
that
how
fucking hamster cheeks did that whole geet, his contract clause and all that bollocks.
Did you hear that
fucking soppy-faced
candle-faced twat talking about Ben Offer the other day as well?
Aye.
Yeah, well, he's a player we could have had here and then his face will have been twitching at the time. Like that fucking horrible bastard.
So,
and that one, that Sessegnon at Sunderland.
Sausage dog.
He's a good player, you know, but we chose against him. Did you? Did you even try and sign him, or are you just trying to make yourself look better that like you missed out on two good signings?
I really hope he fucks off to England like that.
I don't.
With his patter.
I would hate him to be England manager. Like.
That just means I can give less of a shit than I do now.
Well, you can get out of my house, you unpatriotic bastard.
I'd rather he was there. I'm much rather he'd be Spurs so I can continue to hate him. But I know
indeed.
What you mean. So Andrew Douse, I think it's called.
Does he?
I think. Sorry, not sorry. I didn't mean it. Sorry. He's called. Could be a woman. Andrew. Could be.
I know loads of women called Andrew.
Sorry, like.
I do. I know
loads
a few.
Do you think
the club has turned the corner in terms of being on the back pages rather than the front pages of the gutter press? And do you think clubs should regulate what their players say on Twitter? So there's two questions there. The first one is, like I said before. Yes, I think, because there's really nothing much to talk about now with regards to the circus of a club.
It's easier to stay off the front pages when you're playing well as well. Gives them,
correct.
Gives them something else to talk about on the pitch, and then they'll They'll not drudge up shit for the front pages until you get so big like the likes of Man United and that, where
anything's new. Anything's
news. They'll put it on the front page just for the crack.
So I think that's the first one. I think, yeah, I mean, we've certainly turned a corner media-wise.
They seem to be trying, put it that way, and that's all we've ever asked, isn't it? Let's be honest. All we've ever asked is for them to try and communicate and stop doing stupid fucking things.
Yeah. The second question was a good question. It's something that's been around. It's kind of died off now following the Joey Barton piece, but should clubs regulate what the players say on Twitter? Now, as far as I'm concerned, there's certain companies in this country that won't allow people of any stature in their business to have Twitter feeds for that reason.
I think NHS staff are technically not allowed even to be on Facebook.
So
deep down, that they're not meant to have an online presence of any sort. Now, whether they would ever actually push that, I don't know. But I'm sure that's a rule.
I think that, in my opinion, I think they should, because footballers have got to, hated or not, players have got an influence over
they've got responsibility
young people. They've got a responsibility to behave, not to cause unnecessary, I suppose, problems. I mean, what you've got in I think some areas in the likes of Holland and Germany is some things have been said on Twitter that have actually caused rumbles and caused problems between groups of fans. Now, I think that's avoidable, and I think what players should do is they should show some solidarity by not having Twitter accounts.
I think Ryan Taylor walked a fine line the other day, didn't he? He said something about Ashley Young being a disgrace,
which he's since deleted.
Diver and embarrassment and that, and then removed it. Maybe, just maybe, somebody had a little word with him.
I mean, that's a prime example. It causes unnecessary flares and problems for which ultimately come down on the club. Just like Mr. Barton, who's always in the news. I mean, again, it's his opinion. It's his Twitter feed. But he said stuff about the manager.
He's a gobshite as well. Isn't he? That's
However,
you look at the other side of the coin, and
you
sometimes it's kind of bridged the gap between players and fans.
You feel like the players are approachable now, don't you? Feel like you can speak to them. Granted, they're probably not seeing any of the stuff you say, but
because they get about 1,000 tweets every second or something daft. But you know, it in that aspect, it kind of bridges the gap between players and fans that used to exist. Not back in the day, because obviously you used to go and do it in the pub and, you know, socialise with the fans and stuff, but that kind of went away before the use of social media.
I think what needs to happen then, I don't think there'll be a ban for obvious reasons, but I think what clubs should do is, and I know many businesses are doing it as well, is write a clause into the contract which says if you do have a social media account, that you have some responsibility, and you will get fined if you abuse it.
You don't talk about this subject.
Correct. Rather. Basically, they shouldn't be talking about any individual in their profession or the actual game. You know,
I think they should be allowed to pass comment on football and in general.
In general,
but they shouldn't be making specific comments about decisions or players. Specific players and what they've done,
specific
or whatever.
Games,
you know.
Or
all well and good saying, you know, look at Messi, he's brilliant, isn't he? But that's a bit different to saying Ashley Young's a diving cheat, a disgrace, and stuff.
Yeah, or Neil Warnock.
One of them is recognising your peer, and the other one is calling somebody a twat.
Calling one of your peers a twat.
And again, it'll go back to everyone knows who he is. Especially, makes it worse when the account's verified, particularly by Twitter. But it was his opinion, and people will say, well, you're taking away his freedom of speech. Well, no, not really, because, you know, he's part of that players' union, as will the other player be. So,
and you wouldn't expect to be able to badmouth one of your colleagues on the internet to get away with it in any place of work.
Well, exactly. So, I think...
I just call him a bell end to me I think to more, his face, though, my colleagues.
Well, that's true enough. But more... I think more focus will definitely be on it, and more businesses will take it more and more seriously as... I mean, Twitter's exploded over the past 2 years, so... I think more people will. So there's two good questions there from Andrew. Two from Scott Stevenson, I think.
The one that we managed to get to the derby, the 5-1, without him getting chinned.
I bet he wishes he got chinned.
He went anyway, not that mental.
So he had two questions. First one was, and this is something I'm not familiar with, but you lads might be, what do you think of Alan Davies's comments on Liverpool in his podcast?
This is the one where he said Liverpool should play on the anniversary of Hillsborough, and what was it? We've all got sad dates and times in our lives, but we have to get on with it. We all have to work and all of this stuff. And I think he has a point in a way, but I think what he's failed to realise, it's not that they don't want to play on the anniversary of that date. It's that there's a lot of services go on around the Liverpool area on that date, and the staff and the players will go to those services. So that's why they don't play on that date. One, out of remembrance, but two, those services ought to be visited by the players and
so
staff.
So what you said was, it wasn't exactly that bad, really, he kind of didn't know about...
He'll have been ill-informed, won't he?
Ill-informed, exactly.
There's that, and to put it into context, he was having a pop at half a dozen teams in the Premier League at the time for various daft things. He went on to
it wasn't
a
just
Arsenal
specifically
at
that
the Spurs
bit.
Or whatever. So, I mean, he didn't go out and write a do a podcast just to piss Liverpool fans off. It just happened to come up in conversation. He was naive, he was stupid, and I think the justice for the 96 campaign didn't handle it very well themselves, if I'm honest.
They refused a charity bid for
the donation.
Him.
A charity donation.
So Liverpool
I think
fans,
everyone could have come out of it better.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lesson learned there, particularly Hillsborough, still very raw, particularly. For Liverpool fans, so I think his comments were probably, as I say, he may have thought a little more before he said that.
It was based on the timing, I think, of the Spurs Chelsea game on Sunday as well. That's what brought the conversation up. So he fell into a very dangerous area.
An area he's well known he shouldn't have really commented on. That one. Second one, if you knew a Sunderland fan that decided he had enough and wanted to start going to the Newcastle games instead, would you welcome him with open arms or treat him like a leper? My head hasn't been turned. I just thought it'd be a good question. I could never support you, Kearns. Right? So, I mean...
You would be a leper to me, like...
It is a good question, though. It is.
A leper, not
there's
a leper.
There's probably people who've done it.
There'd be plenty.
There is. Aye. That big fat twat with NUFC on his belly used to be a Macken.
Did he?
Aye.
Really?
He used to go to Sunderland games.
So, there'd be plenty of people, but I think now... with the ferocity of some of the Derby games, I think people would probably rather keep it to themselves, under the fear of, especially going with a new original MAG supporters, I think under the fear that they may be outed on occasion. Aye. After a few ales or whatever. But no, I mean, it's a good question. I think maybe 50 years ago you could have said fair enough, but now I don't think it's feasible.
I don't think you could accept that now.
And I don't think any fans.
I can't fathom it. I can't understand the concept of it.
It is a good hypothetical question, but I think realistically, I mean, he should ask that to the Sunderland lads.
Aye.
And see the reaction that they'd give him. I think it'd be pretty similar.
When you've had enough of your team, you've had enough of football, and you might just watch football and enjoy it for what it is. But you've lost your passion. If you've lost your passion for your club, you can't create a passion for another team.
Well said.
Especially the local rivals. So
exactly. When all of that has passed, if you've been a fan for a long time. Anyway, last one from Mark Graham. What would you rather have for a month? Tim Krull's hair or Stephen Taylor's clothes?
Good question.
I'm not as fat as Taylor, so I'd have to go for his hair.
I've always quite fancied a bit of Tim Krull's floppy bonnet. Like,
I know, but I've quite fancied that waistcoat, like short geek half waistcoat combo thing that Taylor was wearing.
That was funky, that wasn't it? Dear
it was
me.
Horrible.
He looked like a robot. Like a robot that had a man's body like squeezed into the top of it. It was that tight. But
plus it was like silver, wasn't it?
He was looking good
well,
though, considering he'd been out for a while, not played. He looked in fair cop like.
Alright, well Palmer, you take the clears.
Aye.
You mean Rob will share we'll share the bonnet, we can have a curtain each.
Well, you're courting like. Right, that's it. I think time for another break and then the last section. So, welcome back. You'll all be pleased to know. Last bit. One of the questions that we did get was, when's our man going to make those foul Volavance again, mainly for Big Jim, who basically took it home, curried it, and had it for his tea. But also the curried goat. You can have a pop again.
Why the curried goat pie.
So what's the plan?
Last game of the season, last home game. Man City. We'll get Papa Ram to make Volavance, as he calls him. You still kind of pronounce Volavance. Volavance. And
Volavance, is that not an ABBA song?
Yes, it is.
Volavance.
They were hot, like. Canny hot.
Oh, they were lovely, like. So, ridiculous. And curried coat. We'll get the curried coat.
Curried coat. So, obviously, where's he going to get the goat from, though? Is he going to have to go to, like, a halal?
Have to slay one or something.
Slay one, not sacrifice one.
Got out with a sword and that, and chasing around the town.
I've never seen a goat in the town. Yeah,
come here, Billy.
Is he going to be wearing war paint?
He's
going to
slay a goat.
Come here, Billy.
Actually, if you tell your father that, if you say to your father,
Gurried
coat might actually end up like Father Ted, where he bakes the jumper in the pie and it's just there's a coat in the pie. Just
boil up a
duffel coat.
Boil up a Berghaus, isn't it? Boiled Berghaus. Sounds quite nice, doesn't it?
With a chauffeur in it.
No.
Heston would be able to create that, like, wouldn't he?
Charlton.
Charlton, aye.
Charlton Heston. I can't do Charlton Heston. I can't even speak.
I can't even speak. Never mind the impressions, man.
I know what you're putting this tea. Anyway. So that's hopefully the plan. So that's going to be sorted for the Man City game. We can potentially take it down the vaults and have a Volavant off in the vaults.
Sure, I'd love that after the last one. The Scotch egg off four.
When the man nearly spewed. Well, actually, both of them did, didn't they?
I thought they were me.
No, well, they hit them that quick, though, to be fair. They weren't expecting that little bit kick to them.
And, what the hell was that?
Like Mexican. They were Mexican, weren't they?
No. Robert Mugabe just walked in.
They were Sprouts Mexican, wasn't it?
Isn't he dying at the minute? They weren't, were they?
Scotch eggs Mexican? There was like something hot to them, wasn't there?
Aye, they weren't actually kebab, were they?
What is this in my Scotch egg?
What, he's West Indian?
Hello there. What is this in my Scotch egg?
That was hot.
That's Michael Holden. That's my impression of Michael Holden. I don't worry, close down the leg side. Anyway.
What were we talking about again? Anyway, I look forward to that Man City game.
Aye, aye.
Nicey spicy. Are we going to do last game of the season outfits as per
planned? Secret plans.
Aye.
We'll be walking the fine line with the old original idea.
It's dead dodgy ground again, like we might offend some people yet again.
There was two, wasn't there? There was the original idea, which basically resulted in us dressed as a certain group of people bombing down Northumberland Street in a race. Then there was the second one, which was which people might think were Man City fans and beat up.
I'm not doing that one. Do the original.
Right.
I'm well up for that.
Right, we'll do that there.
We can twirl these bits of hair that come down inside your face, you know.
But if there's anything like the Mexicans, the bother we had with the tashes, we might have to get some Yoo-Hoo or some old copy decks, glue it to the old
get a bit of Pritz stick.
Top lip.
Gloy.
PVA.
Get a bit of gloy.
And to be fair, if it doesn't work out, we can always sniff the glue after the match. So
I know it. I'm from Shields, but however.
We might need it.
So, there we go. Anyway, next piece, very topical at the moment, which was the ticket, the away ticket piece.
The ones where we're getting about 5 or 6 requests a day for Wigan going, retweet because I need some tickets for Wigan.
Well, it's not so much that. I was thinking more, although that is a pain in the arse, especially months after they went on sale. I can appreciate people who have maybe got seats and they're apart from their pals and they want to swap.
And maybe it's let them down or something.
Even like a couple of days after they've gone on sale and then sold out, you can kind of understand, hang on, somebody's just had a bit of a moment and missed them and they've gone. But the Wigan tickets, they'll have been on sale for weeks before
about
they sold out.
About a month now.
So it's not as if you only had a small window to go and get them. You had a month to buy them.
No, there's no small window now as you're going to a box office and there's like people.
Hey, I hear what you did there.
See what I did there?
I did.
All right.
I'm still shy.
So I mean, that's a pain in the arse, and I think I said, look, stop asking us for retweets months after. But I was thinking more of the Everton fiasco.
Oh, what, that was a bit of a farce.
Like, what happened with the club delaying the tickets and then the comms and then...
The box office has always been notorious. Aye.
The thing is, though, they sold half of them, which they've been allocated. They put half of them on the website, and instead of just saying to people, look, the rest of them are going on sale tomorrow, you had people fretting and thinking, fuck hell, I missed out.
Great if they just
here.
Put that in massive letters on the tickets page. Look, we're flogged half of them today, the rest got on sale tomorrow. Stop flapping.
Well, exactly. Communication. It's the name of the game, isn't it?
They should get us involved to do that PR for them, shouldn't
they? Then we would be
Billets are getting flogged tomorrow from Nine Bells, aren't they?
Then we would be back on the front pages, wouldn't we? Or chased out of town, one of the two. But yeah, I mean, we couldn't do a worse job than the current box office. And by the way, I did get my my letter today for my season ticket for the direct debit schedule.
No renewal.
Starts next month.
I got mine.
Mine started in March.
Aye.
Fuck, what the he doesn't miss a trick, honestly, man. What a character this geezer is, honestly.
Mine started in March for next season. I've already paid 2 months of it.
Mm-hmm.
For next season.
So has anyone read the small print as to what happened if you stopped your direct debit halfway through? Would you get half the games?
I did deactivate your season ticket.
Aye.
After however many equivalents you've paid for. Right. Or possibly from the second that you deactivate it. The second that you stop your direct debit, probably they'll just cancel it there and then because you're no longer a paying
member. I think they'll probably work out like how many matches you've actually paid for.
I would have thought it would be the latter, but you've got to admit it's the box office we're talking about, so they're ruling it themselves.
I was
quite
surprised when it came through, because I wanted to pay 12 months this year, over 12 months. Why not, you know? I don't intend to stop it, my season ticket, so I might as well split it out a bit more, but I didn't expect it to suddenly come out at the beginning of March for a season that starts in August.
It's a bit crazy, it is a bit of a piss tail.
5 months before the season starts, and I've already started paying.
So when does the next one, like...
Right, it rolls on forevermore now.
So but I pay mine over 9 and mine starts at 1st of May. So, I mean, that's fine. I mean, at the end of the day, I think what the box office will tell you and what everyone will tell you is, look, you're paying and you're going to matches. So, you've got to pay it.
And what they're trying to do as well is to spread the income from the tickets over the year instead of getting a massive lumper at one time of the season.
Which is good.
Us, we get interest-free monthly payments. So... there's not a huge amount of whinge about, really.
No,
it's just the fact that the comms are appalling to tell you that their money's about to come out. They should have been sending them out like January to say, right, they're going to start in May. Or
if you do it, starts then, yeah.
Come,
I mean, that's what...
A few months notice, just so you're prepared for what's going to happen with your direct debits.
Look at the delay with the...
If you are struggling cash-wise and you don't know what's coming, you could be fucked.
Well, I mean, look at the issues that they had when they started taking the... There was people saying that I'd... cash taken twice, and people saying they had the bank getting let off the bank saying they've tried to take a payment off you and all that sort of stuff.
That's
it was balmy, man.
That's what happened to me.
It was balmy. It happened to loads of people.
I mean, there's 35,000 season ticket holders. It is a lot of people to try and organise. You're going to get some issues, but the box office don't do themselves any favour because they don't communicate, and two, they never seem to apologise when something goes tits up. You walk in, you explain it, and they'll just say, right, well, you're going to do something about it.
So I think that's down to Mr. Esland, I'm afraid. He's going to have to...
They should be apologising when this thing happens.
And it's a bit disappointing, because I know the fans group are still pushing for...
Well, especially when he was on Twitter, wasn't he? He came on Twitter and he started talking to people, and you thought, actually, this is
a
step
idea.
In the right direction, and then I haven't seen him tweet for months. In fact, I don't even know if I still follow him.
So again, another result of the club saying, right, zip it, silence, which is another, going back to the Twitter thing, so Twitter silence. So anyway, mayhem continues. I got told this joke, and I'm going to tell you lads, if you didn't know what that was, but I got told this joke the other day, and it was, man, was it at Cliff Richard concert in Japan. And Cliff Richard was at the end of his show, and he said, hi fans, is there any dedications? And this bloke at the back just shouts, tits and funny. And he's going, hey, what's going on here? Like, excuse me, I never heard that. Tits and funny. And Cliff Richard's going, sorry fan, I never heard that, can you repeat that? Tits and funny. Anyway, this goes on for a while, as you can imagine. And then Cliff Richard says to this Japanese lad, "Can you sing it?" In the blockhouse, "Tits aren't funny, how we don't talk anymore."
Ding. I've heard that before, but
ding.
Just got told it recently. I thought it was quite funny.
The crowd, Tommy took a motor.
Could have been the very same. Although no, because I don't think he would have.
Hang on, was that the Chinese you were abusing then?
No, that was the Japanese.
Was the Japanese. Sorry.
I wasn't really abusing
them. Is that racist in itself?
No, I was just imitating a Japanese accent badly.
It's dangerous ground these days. I don't know what racist.
Am I racist
because I didn't know whether you were talking about the Japanese or Chinese, and therefore that's racist?
Robbo racist for doing the impression, which is, you know, quite a decent impression.
It was an offensive impression in that it was rubbish.
I was trying my very best to do an impression of a Japanese man singing Cliff Richard.
Your very best.
See, that's racist. and it's also, they have speech impediments as well, but they can't pronounce that Oz. Or is it like a Jonathan Ross Japanese?
A welly.
It'll be welly, won't it? Welly. Welly best.
Ham Jonathan Ross.
Right.
How welcome to my
anyway, show. Right, moving on swiftly.
This is Paul Puffs on a panel. I don't know what that was.
Oh, gosh. Right,
anyway, moving on, predictions.
Oh no.
This is where we're. Right, Stoke, Matty.
That fucking wanker in his cap. Let's get to that stage where I really don't want to predict anything because I'm like horribly scared in case it goes all tits up. However, I'm going to go for 2-0.
Gaz, you'll be sunning yourself.
I'm going to Barcelona trying to find a ticket for the Clásico to watch.
Are you wearing chinos?
No.
And aviators and flip flops and.
None of those things. I'm wearing horrible flowery shorts. And
Hawaiian shirt?
Shorts or short?
Toon goes orange away shirt. For the prediction.
It'd be fucking sweating your face off.
I think we'll probably win by 2 converted tries to none.
I think it'll be 1-0 to us. Okay. So, after that. 28th, Wigan away, massive following going down. Wigan hitting form at the moment to the point where actually I seen on Twitter somebody saying I've just Wiganed me exams, meaning that he'd fucking pissed around all year and then done excellent in the last 2 weeks and got out of danger, which I thought was brilliant. So Wigan away, Matty.
Lose 1-0 because I'm going.
I think there's going to be a hint of, you know, when we take massive followings to places and then we always play disappointingly shit. So. If I'm going to be slightly positive, I'm going to go for a score draw.
I think we'll win the game, and I'll go for a 2-1 win.
So that takes you up to 7 consecutive wins.
Yeah. Then we've got 3 tough games. Chelsea away, who are looking like they're going to beat Barcelona. 90th minutes, let's hope.
First leg.
So Chelsea away, I think that's a midweek game, isn't it? Tuesday night or Wednesday night?
Wednesday night.
It's, yeah, because we got changed for the cup
last weekend.
Aye,
we'll do one.
So, Matty, Chelsea away midweek match.
Strangely enough, I think we'll win it, or at least get a point. And I don't know why, because they're looking quite decent at the minute. But I think we're due something, a bit of luck down there. And that's about it, really, because I fucking hate them and all.
Right, Gaz, Chelsea. Away.
I think we'll probably get beat there. I think they're hitting a little bit of form at the minute, and I think it's probably going to be a little step too far as far as I'm concerned. But I think we'll put up a good fight, and I think we'll score, so I'm going to say probably 2-1.
Right. I must admit, I think that could be a... it depends on how this next game goes as well. One eye on the Champions League, one eye on the FA Cup, but I still think they've got something in the locker. DiMatteo seems to have turned them round. I think it'll be tight. I'd like to think we could do what we did down there last season.
He's got massive eyebrows, hasn't he?
My reason is just because they've got so many games within a short period, and we'll have only had 2.
Yeah, but they've got a far bigger squad, better squad than what we've got, haven't they?
True.
I'm going to say a draw. I'm going to say 1-1 draw.
I definitely think we'll score, because I think they're shaky at the back, and we're dangerous up front. Granted, it's the kept a clean sheet against Barcelona, but
from what we've seen, though, I think Barcelona have had one of their evenings, which they commentators were shouting about.
They've had one of those evenings where people will say, well, Messi's crap on English soil and he will be rubbish on a Monday night at Stoke and all that.
Same old nonsense that we've heard before. And then we'll go to the last two games of the season, last home game of the season, Man City at home, 6th of May.
I think we'll get something out of that. I think City will probably have nothing left to play for by then. I think it'll be game over for the title.
I think it depends on that exact fact, whether or not they've got something to play for or not.
Right, so what do you think then? I mean, they've hammered Norwich, and their patch seemed to be the Tevez show. So what do you reckon, Man City? If it were to play them tomorrow, give us a prediction.
I'm going to say 2-1.
If we were to play them tomorrow, we'd get beat 3-1.
At home?
Aye.
I think we'll get beat. I think we'll get beat 1-0. I think it'll be a close defeat. And then the last game of the season, Everton away, Sunday the 13th of May.
Nothing there for me. Like, I can't see we're getting anything there.
I'm going, so we'll lose 1-0.
I'm going also, so I'm going to say a draw. It'll be as you say, big following. You know, Everton probably trying to get high up the table, depending on the Chelsea result as well, which could open the door for another place. I'd like to think that there'd be some goals in the game, but I don't think there will be. I think it'll be nils each. Everton, nils each. An anti-climax, but very end to a very, very good season.
Chelsea have just, full-time whistle's just gone.
So Chelsea won out.
Beaten Barcelona, so they're plastic one step towards robbing us of another Europa League place, if you want to look at it from a scary point of view.
They're a quarter of the way to doing that, aren't they? Technically.
Yeah, because they're going to have to beat either Real or Bayern.
Well, they've got another leg of this as well.
Yeah. So anyway, let's just see how other teams will perform and take their chances. So right, okay. So that's it. That's nothing more to talk about. End of the podcast. Thanks for listening yet again. Remember to join us on the next podcast, which will probably be the last one, end of season podcast. We'll do one before
I think we should try and do one before the Everton game, because there could be something riding on it.
Right, if we do, we'll do a mini podcast before that game, and if we don't, then we'll do one before the end of the season. But we have confirmed that we will be closing the site for the summer again. We're not going to be bothered with the European Championships like the last time. We're just going to shut it down. We'll put a video up on the end of season video, and we'll also make sure that we keep everyone who's contacted us about the European Championship Prediction League. We'll make sure that we send all the details. We've got a few people
still
that
will be on Twitter, though.
Wanna be. And we'll still be on Twitter. So stay tuned to the website, obviously shiteseats.co.uk. Further podcast updates, as well as all the usual shite that we post on Twitter at shiteseats. Remember, we're also writing an article in Mr. Wraith's Toon Talk magazine. So if you see that new edition, pick up a copy. Matty spent ages writing that. He's very particular about the articles he read. So he did take ages, but unfortunately, I rewrote most of it.
He's also really busy at work as well. That's why he never gets a chance to make wallpapers or
Photoshops and stuff.
Photoshops and all that stuff. Yeah, it's such a shame because he's really good at it. You know,
it is a shame. So hopefully, we'll all see you. I think there's going to be an end of season tweet up after the City game. So hopefully see you all there, but as I say, that'll be before any podcast that we do, which will either be, again, after the City game, before the Everton game, or end of season one after the Everton game.
We have jobs and that, you know, we can't stick to these damn deadlines.
True enough, and well, you've got a child now as well, so. So hopefully see you all at the end of season. Do keep the faith, keep a hold, and how are the lads?
Well, lads.
Just a small town girl, living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going anywhere. Just a city boy, born and raised in South Detroit. He took the midnight train going anywhere. a singer in a smoky room, the smell of wine and cheap perfume, for a smile they can share.